Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
And I am the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith. And this is Rogue Talk for April 17th, 2020. And that was a rough start to the show there. Didn't have one of the buttons pushed. And, well, it's been, I think, 3 weeks since I've been in the studio. So you'll have to cut me some slack. We've all been hiding from the coronavirus. Well, I haven't. As I mentioned the last time I was here, my job is considered essential, which means the word essential doesn't mean what it used to mean. But glad to be here today. And again, today we are going to talk about the effects of the coronavirus on society and on our economy. But again, I'm not going to get into a bunch of the numbers and all of that. You can find that a million other places. And it just doesn't interest me in the way that it's reported to us. It's kind of crazy the way they give these numbers, because most of the numbers that they report on the news night after night after night, they're really kind of meaningless, because there's not, the context isn't there. And again, I think I may have explained this a little bit in the last show that I did on the virus, but you know, there's nothing to compare them to or to contrast the numbers to properly to really know what they mean. And that's part of the reason that a lot of the projections have been completely wrong. I mean, at one point they were projecting 2.5 million deaths. We don't even have that many cases across the entire world. And they were saying in the U.S. alone, there would be 2.5 million deaths. Now, I was questioning that when they said it, and now we can really question it even more now that we see that they just keep lowering and lowering those numbers. So we're going to talk about that. And again, we're going to, I think the main question I want to talk about, we're not going to answer it. I mean, I'm going to try and point to as many things as I can, but I don't think anybody can answer this question right now, at least not precisely. When can we get the economy going at full speed again, and what is that going to look like? That's the main thing I want to talk about today. But before we get to that, let's look at a few other things going on. I got another question. Who is the presidential candidate going to be for the Democrat Party? Now, some of you may be scratching your head going, everybody knows it's going to be Joe Biden. Bernie came out and endorsed Joe Biden, which proves what I've been saying for probably 6 years now. Bernie's a sellout. I'm sorry for you Bernie bros out there, but your man is a sellout. The Democrat Party hamstrung him the first time. The superdelegates made sure that Hillary Clinton got the nomination. She ran a horrible campaign and lost to one of the biggest jerks that in public life that we know. Now, that's not to say that I don't like some of the things President Trump has done. I actually do. But she blew it. And he went back to his, you know, his three homes and didn't put up much of a stink, even though we saw the Democrat Party giving answers ahead of time, or giving questions, I should say, ahead of time to Hillary Clinton before debates. We know the superdelegates won it for her, even though Bernie was beating her in some states. And he didn't do anything about it, made very little waves about it the first time around. And then this week, after the Democrat Party basically, you know, pulled the rug out from under him again, he's endorsing Joe Biden. And Joe Biden got another endorsement this week, although I mean, at least with Bernie, he was in the race. He was the main competition. He's not pulling himself off of ballots. He wants to collect as many delegates as he can. And I think that's going to force Joe Biden to stay as the nominee until he officially gets it at the convention, even if it's a different type of, you know, maybe an online convention, whatever it might be. But I still think Biden will not be the nominee when we get to November. And I could be wrong, and I kind of hope I am wrong, but I think I talked about this last time I was on the air. This guy's losing it, and I'm not saying this to be, you know, to be funny or hyperbolic. His the sound bites, almost everything he says now is a sound bite. I mean, he doesn't make any sense. He can't remember his thought one minute to the next. I really think they're going to keep him in place until he gets the nomination, until it's official he's the nominee. And then they're going to have to replace him. I don't know what that looks like, but I know in my mind they're trying to keep Bernie from having a claim to be the nominee if Biden pulls out. They really don't want Bernie to be the nominee. And again, Bernie has no backbone. He blusters and blusters about all these terrible, you know, how terrible the country is and how his you know, communist socialist policies are going to fix that. And then when push comes to shove, he, you know, scurries back into his, you know, modest three homes and, you know, hides and then he comes out and endorses Joe Biden, who is clearly mentally, you know, incompetent. Again, I'm not making fun of him. I feel sorry for him. I really do. It's gonna make it, if he stays as the nominee, it's gonna make it kind of tough on Trump to debate him. Not that it won't be easy to win the debates against him. I think it will. But you have to do it in such a way that you don't embarrass him and you don't humiliate him, because that's going to turn off a lot of people. And Trump's not always good at that. So it's going to be a tough thing in the debates for Trump if Biden stays the candidate. But I just don't see it. I think they're setting this up to replace him, but not with Bernie. And again, I could be wrong, but it's interesting to think about. It's interesting to talk about. I know I have a lot of Democrat friends that, you know, they're pushing for Andrew Cuomo. They're pushing for that Kendall they call the governor in California, Newsom. I'd be careful if you're leaning that direction. Sounding good on TV during a pandemic is one thing, but their leadership, If you really look at what they've done, it's not that fabulous. So, you know, we'll wait and see. But it's an interesting thing to pay attention to. Something else in the news, and you're only going to know that it's in the news for most of you because I'm telling you right now that it is, because nobody's reporting this, and mostly because, you know, as I mentioned to a friend, I think yesterday, 20 out of 30 minutes of a local newscast, at least where I live, and I bet it's this way just about everywhere, 20 out of the 30 minutes of a local newscast is coronavirus. Now, the station I like to watch here in the Valley, every story they're doing that has any connection at all to coronavirus, they put this red background up with the whatever, you know, whatever highlights they want to put up, or maybe there's a picture or whatever it is they're putting on the screen, their little overlays. The background of those overlays are red because they want to scare you. They want to make you. It got so bad at one point that they're running these PSAs, basically, except it's for their own station. They've taken so much pushback that they ran these things. They took two of their anchors and they ran these little clips where they're saying, we're here to bring you the facts and to bring you the most pertinent information. We're not trying to scare you. And I'm like, who are you kidding? You purposely put up a red background every chance you get What do you think that red background's there for? It's to scare people. If you're just bringing us the facts, then use the same blue background you use for every other story. It's just ridiculous. So if you're getting so much pushback that you have to run a PSA for your own station, maybe you're doing it wrong. And I have a suspicion this is happening all over the country. People are, you know, getting fed up with these giant corporations that own most of these local stations. You know, some of them are regional, some of them are nationwide corporations, but either way, their agenda is not our agenda in our local community. Frankly, they're not really that interested in that. It shows in their reporting, and it shows in this kind of ridiculous, scare. And that's not to say that there's not some scary things about coronavirus. Of course there is, and we're going to talk about some of those things in the next segment. But, you know, come on, people. It's so clear what they're doing. It's kind of crummy, but I digress. Getting back to where I started, story you're not hearing, and they're hiding it within the Spygate. They're hiding it in the coronavirus thing. Everybody's worried about coronavirus. It's all they can pay attention to. Meanwhile, the IG report, the Inspector General report that was put out several months ago that had a lot of redactions because of classified, that was, you know, a lot, big parts of it were classified. Well, they've declassified big portions of that. And I know you probably heard nothing about it because nobody's going to tell you about it. Maybe Fox News did. I don't watch Fox News. If for no other reason, I find their news to be very similar to all the other networks and cable channels. Their opinion shows are definitely conservative, but I think I've said this on here before. I'm not a fan of their opinion hosts. I just don't. It's not interesting to me what they're doing there. So I don't watch Fox News, but I would imagine maybe they've run the stories about the declassification of the documents, but maybe they haven't either. I don't know. I haven't been watching, but I'll just get one of the main takeaways from this. The FBI has said from the start, and the reason they say this is because they have to defend what they told the FISA court when they went in to get the permission to spy on people in the Trump organization, both before and after the election. They had to get a warrant in the FISA court. And what they were consistently telling the FISA court, and they were playing tricks to basically trick the court, but we're not going to get into all that today. They were telling the FISA court one thing, and one of the things they were saying was that the so-called dossier that had all of this fake information about President Trump was not the main reason for the investigation. In fact, they said they opened the investigation in July and said they didn't have the dossier until September. Well, now that they're declassifying some of the IG report, one of the big takeaways is that's not true. They had the information in June. They had some of the information in July. There's some investigation now into whether the supposed author of the dossier was actually the author and not just compiling the information from other sources. There appears to be the fact that there's a bunch of fake information, but they attribute it to real people. And all of this is starting to come out because of the declassification. So again, we can go back several months. I told you, and I get this from other sources, I'm not the investigator on this, but I'm following it fairly closely. This is one of the biggest scandals our country has ever seen, and it has nothing to do with Donald Trump, President Trump, or candidate Trump. It has to do with the CIA and the FBI and the Five Eyes partners, which are the, you know, people we share intelligence information with and investigative information with across the world. The two main ones that it includes is Britain and Australia. If you know anything about the story, you know why. And again, we're not going to go into that today, but lots of stuff coming out. And what I've been saying all along continues to be the facts continue to pile up behind the angles that I've supported on this. And I'm not patting myself on the back. This is not my investigation. I'm just following it as closely as I can. And what I've been saying is what I'm seeing in front of me, and it just keeps getting reinforced more and more. So don't know if anyone will actually pay the price for their misfeasance or malfeasance or complete illegality, but we'll have to wait and see. Since I always do sports in this segment and there's no sports going on, lo and behold, a guy that I actually like made a big mistake this week, and I'm curious to see how it plays out. NASCAR driver Kyle Larson, one of the younger drivers, was participating in one of these iRacing events. It's pretty bad. We're missing sports so bad that I know there's a lot of people that watch people play video games. It's like a thing. Not a thing for me, but so now we've got iSports events going on. The NBA was doing a tournament. This week they were doing horse. They're doing a remote horse competition. So I haven't really been paying attention, so I don't know how that's going. But they had done a tournament before playing one of the NBA video games, probably 2K. I don't know what version is we're on right now, 2K20 or 19 or something. I'm not even sure. So we've come down to watching iSports, which is crazy. And I'll admit, I watched a little bit of a NASCAR iSports. I tried to do a sprint car, World of Outlaws one, and I tried to tape it on. I tried to tape iRacing. I admit it. It was a sprint car event, and my YouTube TV, it shows that I set it up to record. It shows it in my events. There's nothing there for me to play, so I'm not sure what happened. Probably my mistake. I'm not the most tech savvy, as most of you probably know if you listen to this show on any regular basis. But anyhow, so getting back to the Kyle Larson story, on his, you know, they're all wearing headsets and communicating with one another. And I guess that's pretty common with online gaming. They've all got their headsets on. They can talk to one another. I know my son plays basketball with his friends and they can talk back and forth. So pretty common thing with the iSports, I guess. And unfortunately, he said one of those things you can't say, this one in particular, probably the worst one, referring to African Americans, I guess. I hate that term, but that's the easiest way to say. And of course, we all know it is the N-word, and this is no defense of him, so don't take this the wrong way, but it was not used in a racial manner. And I know that sounds stupid, but unfortunately there's a lot of people that word is in their, especially from their youth, it's in their lexicon, it's in their brain. They, you know, kids say it to one another. I hear it all the time and I don't like it. I'm not making excuses for it, but it's out there. Of course, in a lot of music in the African American community, it's pretty regular in the rap genre and some of the hip hop genre. It's hard to talk about this because as a not black person, my opinion really doesn't mean much because I can't relate to what experiences people have, but I do find it interesting that it can be used over and over and over and over again with one another. And sometimes it's, like I said, it's used just like buddy, you know, hey, buddy. And I mean, again, it sounds stupid, but even when I was a kid, it got used that way. You know, and again, I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying it's out there. It happens. And so he quickly lost some of his sponsorships, and then eventually Chip Ganassi Racing, which is who he drove for in NASCAR, they fired him. It's unclear where his racing career will go from here, but, you know, and there's been various feedback. You know, Bubba Wallace is a black driver in NASCAR, and he was pretty critical of him, which I find a little ironic because he's a younger guy as well. And I imagine that, and I can't speak for him, I don't know, but he's kind of a hothead as it is. So I imagine he's probably uttered that term a few times. And again, it's not up for me to say whether that's okay or not, but you know, he recently got a lot of blowback because he was in the iRacing event the previous week, and he just quit. He didn't like what had happened. One of the other drivers was mad at him for a move he made, and the guy, I guess he took him out. It's a video game. If he took you out, you get back in. It's not that big a deal, but he got mad and he quit. So, you know, it's hard for me to judge just from that one person, but he was pretty critical of it. The name's escaping me. There's another, I wish I had the name in front of me. One of the first black drivers in NASCAR many years ago, and he was a little more balanced in what he said. He was a little more forgiving of Kyle, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, with no sports going on, I guess we find our controversy in playing iSports. So I've gone way over in this segment, but that's okay. It's my show, and I wanted to cover those. So when we come back, we'll ask ourselves a question. What are we waiting for to get back to work?
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Republicans say they are willing to accept Democratic demands for additional federal funding for hospitals to break a stalemate over the Trump administration's $250 billion request for a small business coronavirus aid program that's run out of money. House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy told the Associated Press on Friday that he is also willing to meet a demand by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to set aside some of the requested paycheck protection funding for community lenders. The program, which has run out of money, helps small businesses pay employees during the virus outbreak. McCarthy says Republicans would draw the line at Democratic demands for billions of dollars in funding for state and local governments. Talks continue this weekend. On Wall Street, the Dow by 704 points. The NASDAQ rose 117. The S&P 500 advanced by 75. This is SRN News.
Broadcasting to Rum River, Gull Hill, Weimer, and beyond. 94.3, The Bridge.
With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. The U.S. Tennis Association is optimistic that the U.S. Open is going to be held as scheduled.
A decision on whether or not the U.S. Open will take place as scheduled due to the coronavirus pandemic is expected to come sometime in June. U.S. Tennis Association CEO Mike Dowse made the comment during a conference call on Thursday with reporters. The new USTA executive also addressed the idea of hosting the tournament without fans in attendance, an idea he didn't seem too keen on. The final decision will come in consultation with a medical advisory group consisting of at least five doctors. The U.S. Open, which is scheduled to begin on August 24th, is the next major tournament on the tennis calendar. Christian Arnold, New York.
In NFL news, Cleveland Browns chief strategy officer Paul DePodesta has dismissed a report the team is trying to trade star wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. to the Minnesota Vikings. He said it is, quote, completely false. Beckham is excited to be back. This is SRN Sports. In college football news, USC quarterback JT Daniels has entered the transfer portal, although head coach Clay Helton says he would welcome him back if he decides to stay. Daniels immediately became the Trojan starter as a freshman in 2018, passing for over 2,600 yards with 14 touchdowns and 10 interceptions during an inconsistent season. He won the starting job again out of camp last summer, but lost it to Keaton Slovis when Daniels injured a knee. College basketball, Denzel Mahoney has joined Creighton teammate Tyshawn Alexander in declaring for the NBA draft. Mahoney played 21 games for the Blue Jays after transferring from Southeast Missouri, averaging 12 points and 3 rebounds as a reserve wing. He can return to Creighton after going through the evaluation process by league executives as long as he does not sign with an agent and withdraws from the draft by June 3rd. And sophomore guard Ayo Dosunmu is also announcing he's leaving Illinois to enter the draft. This is SRN Sports.
Welcome back to Road Talk. And if you'd like to call the show, and I would love today to hear from you because nobody has the right answer on this. We all have opinions. But we won't have enough information to know exactly the right thing to do. It may be a year from now before we know if we've done the right thing. So nobody has the right answer. So I would love to hear from you, hear what you think about getting the country back to work, what that looks like. So the phone number here, 541-299-0498, 541-299-0498. Now put your DVR on pause. I know the president's doing his daily, briefing on the coronavirus and all the, ways he can pat himself on the back and fight with reporters. And there's important information in those briefings. I'm not making light of it, except that just sometimes they're kind of ridiculous. So just hit pause on the DVR and call the show. So what is it we're waiting for? What is the metric we're looking for, or word from whom that will allow us to get back to work? And the reason I'm talking about this today is I had originally planned to do a show on Commander Crozier, the commander or the former commander of the Roosevelt, aircraft carrier Roosevelt. He was a friend of mine in school. I played Little League with him. I don't know him in other than going to school with him. He was a year behind me, so he graduated a year after me. But again, we played Little League together. I had planned to do a show talking about that situation. We're going to try and do that next week. I've got another school friend that has also served in the Navy. He was also friends with Brett Crozier. And if all goes well, we'll have an interview with him, and I will kind of pick his brain, get because I think I need the perspective of someone not only that has served, but that also was friends with Commander Crozier. And so and there's been a lot of things going on amongst the friends and the high school friends and whatnot, and a lot of support for him. And I support him 100%. I don't necessarily support everything he did in a certain respect, but again, we'll get into that. So hopefully next week we will talk about that. But the reason I decided to shift gears and talk about this today was I saw something interesting on social media. There was a petition going around, and I got to be honest, I hate these petitions. In fact, there was one going around in relationship to Commander Crozier to get him reinstated. Now, of course, it doesn't work that way. You don't sign a petition and they reinstate the person, but it does get the attention of the people in charge when hundreds of thousands of people sign a petition or something. But ultimately it has no power other than the power of getting recognized, I guess. But there was a petition going around about the what would you phrase it, for hairdressers to be able to get back to work, because I guess a lot of people are starting to look kind of shaggy. I actually went the other way. I mean, I do need a haircut really bad, but I actually shaved all of my beard or my goatee and my mustache off. I've been told that's called, actually, if you have the goatee and the mustache, it's called a Van Dyke. I would have to look that up. I don't know, but I've been told that's what it's actually called. I shaved it all off, shaved everything. Haven't shaved since, so I'm a little scraggly today. Not really sure what I'm going to do, but I really could use a haircut, but I really don't have a dog in this fight. I can live several more weeks without a haircut. It's not a big deal. But the petition was for hairdressers and the like to get back to work. And at a one person at a time basis, I'm not sure what that means, because you can only work on one person at a time anyhow. So I don't know if they meant one per day, one, you don't let other people in the salon. I didn't even read the petition, because I don't really sign stuff like that. I think it's really kind of a waste of time. But two different people shared it on my friends list. One of them was in support of it, and one of them was like, quit sharing this. This is ridiculous. This is dangerous, and all of that. So that kind of got my attention to, that's just one industry that people would like to get going again. I'm sure there's a lot of, well, in fact, I know, I don't know if you know who Paige Davis is. She is the host of Trading Spaces, and she's done some off-Broadway work and some other stuff. She posted an Instagram video recently showing how long her gray roots were coming in. And she's a brunette, and she, you know, clearly, like a lot of women her age, my age, she's, I think, the same age as me, 50. And she colors her hair to keep it her original color in her case. Some women do a different color, but either way, doesn't matter. And she was showing the gray roots and kind of lamenting that they were coming in faster and faster, or at least it feels that way. But it got me thinking. There was such a separation. I mean, complete, total, different sides of the spectrum on this. And I understand both perspectives. Especially living here in Southern Oregon, we just don't have that many cases down here. There hasn't been this, like, you know, doubling of cases. There was one day where it was kind of amusing, because it went from, I think, from 3 to 6. That's how few cases. I mean, we're still under 100. I don't have, again, I don't care about all the numbers, except just in a general basis. I do, you know, to somewhat track what's going on, but I don't pay attention to it super closely. But the numbers doubled, but it was like from 3 to 6 or from 6 to 12, and it only happened the one day. But the day that it happened, the spokesperson or the leader, I don't know the terms, it really doesn't matter, of our county health department was saying, oh, the community spread is now rampant. It's gonna, I don't know the words he used, but, you know, oh, it's gonna go crazy now. And I'm like, are you joking? Are you really? I remember telling whoever was sitting with me at home when this came on, I don't know if it was my son or my wife, but I'm like, is this guy kidding? It's one day, and it's so few cases. There's no way to know if that's what was happening. And it wasn't. That wasn't what was happening. We haven't had, I'm not even sure we've had a peak. It's kind of bounced around. It's crazy. So in a community like this, is it safe for people to start going back to work? That's kind of the question we're looking at. And of course, there's all these different things going on as far as, I mean, obviously, if you're in the heart of New York City, yeah, it's not time for you to go back to work. If you're 80 years old and you have emphysema or COPD or you're severely overweight, yeah, you probably should stay home. You probably shouldn't go out even with a mask. That's pretty smart. But at some point, we have to get back to work. And I was looking at some different articles kind of related to this, and I found one in The Atlantic that they were talking to a Harvard epidemiologist, Professor Mark, going to have to be careful with this one, Lipsitch. And one of the things he said really kind of caught my attention, and it was something that I had been thinking about, and it was good to kind of get at least one expert's feedback on this. And there's a quote in the article from him that said, "Actually, let me start again." And then the author of the article said, "So it's striking when one of his points, he wanted to get it exactly right. And what it was this: I think the likely outcome is that it will ultimately not be containable." Now, if you think about that, it can be really, really scary. This expert epidemiologist professor does not think this will be containable. He predicts that within the coming year, 40 to 70% of people around the world will be infected by the virus that causes COVID-19. But it goes on to say, he clarifies emphatically, this does not mean that all will have severe illness. It's likely that many will have mild disease or may be asymptomatic, he said, as with influenza, which is often life-threatening to people with chronic health conditions and of older age. Most cases pass without medical care. He said about 14% of people with influenza have no symptoms. So this is something that I've been saying for a while because of the experts that I've been listening to. And what that is if you're thinking that we're all staying home, or those of us that have been told we have to stay home, if you're thinking we're doing this so that this disease just goes away over time, everybody that's going to get it gets it, and then we all go back to work, that's not what we're doing, and that's not how this works. What I'm told is the main two reasons, one of them I don't completely buy, and I'll get to that in a minute, but the main two reasons that we're doing the stay-at-home orders is to flatten the curve. And I know I'm so tired of hearing that, but what that means is we don't want to overwhelm our medical community. Now, we've done that. Even in New York, where it got really ugly, we've done that. Now, we've had some shortages of supplies, and there's a lot of conspiracy theories going around about that. Even right here, I have a doctor that I work for in my business that put out a letter and was looking for help because they were running short on supplies. And I'm like, there's no cases down here. I mean, there was like at the time there was like 6 cases down here. How are you short of supplies? Well, her husband happens to also be a doctor, and I had a chance to talk to him, and he was a little coy with me about it as I asked him a couple of questions. But the overarching thing that he kind of really got across to me was he was downplaying the whole shortage thing. Now, I don't dispute there was probably some shortages places, and I think the reason even somewhere like here had a shortage was because the suppliers were rationing. You know, they knew that they had, you know, customers that needed it more than others, and they were starting to ration some of the supplies, things like masks and gowns and that sort. But It seems a little odd to me, so I'm not surprised there's a lot of conspiracies going around, because a lot of the stuff just doesn't add up. And there's all kinds of different theories about all of this. But the other reason we were supposedly trying to flatten the curve was to give time to find treatments and to find a vaccine. Now, treatments is one thing, a vaccine is a whole nother. The low estimates for finding a vaccine are 18 months. We can't keep the economy closed, essentially, and keep people out of work for 18 months. That's not, it's just not reasonable. And the numbers don't really reinforce that that's necessary. And again, it sounds morbid when we start, you know, doing a risk analysis. It sounds morbid, but we do this every day. When you get in a car and you drive to work or you drive to the market, you got a good chance, at least good compared to dying of one of these diseases, you've got a pretty good chance of being killed driving to work or walking across the street. There's a lot of things that we do that we know people die every day. And take the driving, for instance. We know how many, you know, certain amount of deaths every year from cars, auto accidents. We could lower the speed limit to 25 miles an hour, and we could probably cut the death rate by 99%. But we don't do that. Why not? Because we do a risk analysis. Not necessarily an actual risk analysis, but we analyze these things in our brain, and we're willing to take the risk to a certain extent, because the economy can't grow as fast if we all can only drive 25 miles an hour. There's lots of reasons for that, but there's all these things that go into this risk analysis that we do in our brain. So it sounds morbid, but it's really not. And if you look at the other side of it, in 4 weeks, unemployment has risen by 20. Let me find the number. I have it here. I thought I had it in front of me. I believe the number's 22 million. 22 million new unemployment claims in the last 4 weeks. That puts our real unemployment at about 17 or 18%. That's very, very significant. And unfortunately, a lot of those jobs are the very people that live paycheck to paycheck that can't afford it. A lot of those people need to get back to work, or we're going to have not only one of the worst recessions we've ever seen, we could go into another depression. We've never seen unemployment numbers like this, never, ever in the history of our country, not even close. And so it's a serious thing that we have to look at. And again, as I said from the outset, we don't all have, none of us has the right answer, but we have to work together to take calculated risks based on the evidence we have. And one of the evidences that we have is we know the age groups that are affected the most. In fact, I was listening to another show today, and so I don't know who to credit the source for the information. I apologize. But he was reading through some of the statistics, I believe, out of New York, and it was striking to me that the death rate, and again, these numbers can be kind of meaningless because we don't really know the infection rate at this point. We know the infection rate of those that have been tested, but we don't know the overall infection rate. But having said that, the death rate percentages for all the youngest age groups were like 0.01%. He was reading these age groups off 0.01, 0.01, 0.01. It just went on and on until you got over 45, and then it steadily climbed up until you got, I believe it was over 70, where it really spiked. So I can see a situation where we can put more people back to work. We can still practice some social distancing. We can, you know, wear masks, although they told us not to. Then they told us, well, they won't protect you, but if you're sick, they protect other people. And really, they freaked everybody out, and everybody was out buying up masks. And then there was a shortage of masks because people are stupid, like they were with toilet paper. And they act stupidly, as the Obama administration once said. But it was interesting because the media was always playing from behind because they created the controversy. Then they realized what they had created, so they tried to fix it, and all they did was made it worse. And now they're telling us, well, wearing a mask could be a good idea. Well, yeah, no duh. Why do you think every medical person, when they go into the room, if you have the flu or you have any other communicable disease that can be passed through the air, they put on a mask? They wear a gown, usually a disposable gown. They may make you wear a mask. Why do they do that? Are they protecting you from diseases they might be carrying? Well, in some cases, yes. But no, they're protecting themselves from what you've got because they don't know what you've got. That's why you're there. They're going to figure out what you have, or hopefully figure it out. So, you know, they play us like a bunch of fools. And, well, frankly, a lot of us behave that way. And we act like the sheeple that they treat us like. And we do stupid stuff like buy up all the N95 masks and buy up all the toilet paper and buy up all the bleach and disinfectant wipes. And, you know, if we I said this several weeks ago, but if we ever wanted to give a country a way to shut down the nation, not just the nation, the whole world, here you go. Just let a disease escape from a region in China. And, you know, a lot of the evidence is starting to point to, you know, that it came out of a lab in China. I'm not saying it was an attack. I think it was more likely an accident. But more and more the evidence says it was not in the market. It was not in the wet market or whatever else, whatever term they use. It's a virus we know comes from bats. There were no bats being sold in that particular market that they attributed it to, which is interesting. You would think you would at least pick a market that sold those. There's two labs in the vicinity of that market, within 2 miles of that market, that could have possibly been handling that virus. Again, I don't buy the conspiracy theory that it was, you know, a purposeful weaponized thing. It could be, but I don't think so. But it's looking more and more likely that maybe there was some sort of accident involving one of those labs, and that's where this came from. So there's just so many. The information comes at us from so many.
You're listening to Rogue Talk.
And I'll be right back.
94.3, The Bridge. The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. U.S. stocks joined a worldwide rally and closed out their first back-to-back weekly gain since the market began selling off 2 months ago. The S&P 500 jumped 2.7% Friday, following up on even bigger gains in Europe and Asia as investors latched on to several strands of hope about progress in the fight against the coronavirus. They included the White House release of guidelines for states to reopen their economies and a very early but encouraging report on a possible treatment for COVID-19. The gains came even as scary data piled together about the economic and human toll of the virus. The U.S. is struggling to test enough people for the novel coronavirus so officials can track and control the spread of the disease. That's a crucial first step to reopening parts of the economy, as President Trump is pushing to do by May 1st. More details at srnnews.com.
Keeping you informed, giving you the good news. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge,
your hometown voice.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. I let that break sneak up on me, but that's all right. So we just got a couple of minutes left, but so let's get back to the overall question was, can we get back to work? When do we get back to work? What is it we're looking for to get us back to work? Again, as I mentioned, 22 million people added to the unemployment rolls in the last 4 weeks alone. That represents about 16% of the workforce. Forbes estimates the real unemployment is now at about 18%. As far as waiting for a vaccine, forget about it. It's not, we may not even find a vaccine. AIDS came out in the 80s. We do not have a vaccine or a cure for AIDS. We have some very effective treatments now. We do not have a vaccine and we do not have a cure. We studied SARS. We studied MERS. And let me just give you a quick example before I run out of time. The difficulty in finding these vaccines. Of the 33 vaccine candidates for SARS, only two reached clinical trials in humans. The rest stopped at the preclinical stage. For MERS, there were 48 vaccine candidates went to clinical trials on humans, while the others only made it to the preclinical stage. We don't have effective vaccines for those viruses. Now, part of the thing is if the virus mutates quickly and effectively, like the flu, for instance, when you get a flu shot, it usually has two or three versions of the virus in it. And they're guessing, you know, it's an educated guess, but they're guessing that these will be the right ones, and they're often wrong. So if you're waiting for a vaccine to get back to work, you're not going to get back to work. Just sign up for welfare and be done with it, because you're not going back to work. But we have to be smart about it. There's the president has one plan. We didn't even get into some of the things, like all the business loans have run out already and Congress is doing nothing to add to them. And let's be honest, those loans stink. It's a terrible program. That whole bill was a disaster, but it's what we've got. It's what we're going to have to work with. And they need to refund that program so they can give out more loans. But again, we could do a whole other show on how disastrous and what a poor job they did writing the bills that are supposed to, you know, help people. We got people getting more money on unemployment than they were making when they were employed. It's a terrible way to do things. But we need to start putting people back to work. It needs to start in communities like this one here, where, you know, the numbers are just are very low. It doesn't mean it's not scary. It is. If it scares you enough that you'll stay out of the process for a while longer, then do that. Nobody's compelling you to go back to work right away. That's all we've got for you today. Everybody be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith, Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.